Had some hothead gone rogue? A perceived insult, perhaps? The eye of terror drove men mad. But as they listened, a thread of calm began to establish itself. It was one man's voice, cutting through the shouting and the screams. He gave commands, calmed terrified men down. He started to bring the scattered survivors of Tyrok Fields together again into an army, fought chaos with order. "That's Creed," Bendict said, and stood with one hand on the vox, as if standing next to the general. "That's Asarka E. Creed," he shouted. "Get Creed on the vox. No, send him a message. Tell him Major Bendict and the 101st are stranded at Observation Post 9983. Mia tried, but the vox channels were overloaded. After an hour of failing, he raised a hand.
"There's going to be an announcement, sir."
The whole 101st gathered in a rough horseshoe about the vox.
"Men and women of Cadia."
It was Creed. He was speaking intimately. It was as if he were in the room with them. They felt his closeness. It was part of his magic.
"We lost many today. Friends, sons, mothers, daughters, comrades. We withstood fire, bombardment, treachery and cowardice. And we did not flinch. We did not turn to ask if another would step up and take our place. We stood, we fought, and we strode forward into battle."
There was a sound of distant cheers through the vox, and Bendict's stomach ached. If only they could have been there in the battle. He pictured the scene. The vast Tyrok fields stretching away, fires burning, Medicare units looking for the injured. Creed's bullish silhouette with a greatcoat slung over his shoulders, cigar stub in his hand.
"Today, the High Command of Cadia have asked me to serve as Lord Castellan of Cadia."
There were more cheers. The atmosphere in the room was so quiet you could hear a man breathe. Bendict could imagine Creed's knuckles, white on the podium, waiting for the crowd to go silent. Creed's voice came again.
"I have accepted the honour."
Bendict and Dahl exchanged looks. There was a long pause as the cheers of Tyrok Fields rang out. Creed was waiting. Bendict imagined him putting up his hands for silence.
"What happened today was no accident. It was no chance. This was orchestrated by a mind that has planned and plotted for thousands of years. The Despoiler. It is the hour that we have long foreseen. The chance to prove ourselves his match."
More cheers.
"I offer you nothing but blood and battle. This is our part in a war that has lasted 10,000 years. And today, brothers, today we, you, have won a great victory that will be remembered for another 10,000 years. Or as long as the Imperium of Mankind shall last."
The sound of cheering was drowned out by a military band playing Flower of Cadia. The broadcast clearly over.
"Turn it off," Bendict told Mia.
There was a stunned silence. Bendict stood by the vox and looked into the faces of his soldiers.
"You heard what Creed had to say, and I know that you feel the same as me. We should be down there. Instead, we're here, in this throne-forsaken observation platform. I'm going to do all I can to sort this mess out. You will all have a chance to strike a blow against our foes. I promise you that."
The next day, dawn did not come. The skies of Cadia turned black as the great fleets of the Imperial Navy defence monitors and orbital defence platforms, the proud defences that he had seen just days before from the decks of the Fidelitas Vector, were swept aside by the vast fleet of the Black Legion. Massed cruisers, landers, crash pods, the warhosts of the Despoiler filled the skies. Weeks turned to months, and the attitude changed from anger to despair. Creed's pronouncements over the vox became more impassioned.
"People of Cadia," each speech would begin. "We have smashed an armoured column at Khazar-Relon. The enemy has landed on Cadian soil in great force. We are the generation upon whose shoulders lies the heavy duty of sending them all to their deaths.
Creed's deep voice remained a constant, even when there was bad news to share.
People of Cadia, the walls of Khazar Batroc have been breached, but I am assured that the men there are fighting with grit and resolve, and it cannot be long before the enemy are trapped and isolated and their forces entirely destroyed. People of Cadia, hold strong. We are the barb that holds the fore. Reinforcements are on their way. The High Lords of Terror commend you for your sacrifices. Hold the line. Repel the enemy. Do not give ground.
Each night, clots of black cruisers dropped flocks of landers that fell planetwards like flocks of carrion birds. They disgorged their full payloads, spewing out a disorganized sprawl of ritually scarred cultists, demon engines and champions of the dark gods who killed their way to power. Feral and hive worlds had been emptied of populations and loaded into vast hangars, and now they spilled out in maddened squads numbering thousands in each, charging in wild jubilation, screaming unholy names, losing themselves to prayer and abandon. They spewed out in such numbers that even the massed brigades and armoured columns of the Cadian shock troopers, the finest human warriors in the galaxy, were slowly driven back, trench by trench, redoubt by redoubt, and finally, Khazar by Khazar. Day after day, hour after hour, tons of ash coiled snake-like into the upper atmosphere, turning the planet dark. Each day, Major Benedict stood on the high parapet of Observation Post 9983 and watched in desperate impotence. On the 30th day, he took out his scopes to watch the Black Fleet mass its power against his hometown of Khazar Halyk. His tridome helmet cast a slanted shadow across his face as the broadside of lance batteries strobed the night of Cadia with long bars of incandescent white light. The lightning storm went on for hours, smothering the plain in dust and ash and stitching an irregular pattern of mushroom clouds up into the high atmosphere. Khazar Halyk was taking a fearful punishment. Day by day, its void shields flickered blue and then yellow. They were straining to the limits.
Sir.
Bendick turned. Sergeant Tyson was making his way towards him, still pulling his thick, ice-whirled gloves on. Bendick had been leaning far over the parapet, and he pulled back as Tyson joined him.
How do you think it's going down there?
Tyson asked. The lance lightning strobed their faces.
They're taking a hell of a pounding.
Tyson nodded.
It won't be long, Bendict said.
Tyson's expression said it would not. He puffed out his cheeks.
You should get some rest, sir, he said.
Another furious broadside against the city rolled like thunder. I was born in that city, Bendict said. I know her switchback streets and armoured intersections like the butt of my las rifle. They stood, lightning casting stark shadows across their faces as the orbital bombardment continued. The mountain beneath their feet trembled as a titanic explosion on the plains lit the clouds from within, like a distant red nebula. There was a series of gathering blasts, each one big enough to show yellow through the gloom, and Benedict felt his guts knot themselves together as the boom rolled across the plain towards him. The debris rose miles high. Chunks of rockcrete, bastions, armories and defenders like dust rising into the upper atmosphere. Khazar Halyk was no more. The very fate of the Imperium of Man hung in the balance, and there was nothing he or his Cadian 101st could do.
We can stay ready, Tyson said, by way of consolation. Stay fresh. We can keep ourselves sharp.
Benedict made no comment. He had no more words left. He was stuck on the mountain fastness, and Cadia was dying before his eyes. On the 110th day of the war, Benedict was stripped to the waist doing press-ups when the Vox unit crackled. He fumbled for a moment, dusted his hands off. Tyson? The other man's voice was indistinct with the gale that was blowing outside. Say that again. Benedict had to raise his voice to be heard. Again, he said. There was a long pause as his words echoed in the vast empty chamber. A Valkyrie? Are you sure?
Yes, Tyson said. Coming in now.
Benedict cursed as the link was dropped. He pulled his undershirt and flak jacket on and started to hurry through the empty hangars. The Vox link was re-established as he exited the stairwell. Tyson was calling his name. The urgency of his voice sent a chill of fear through Benedict, the sound of his footsteps gathering speed until he was running.
Benedict, Tyson said. You have to come! He's here!
Tyson was practically shouting into the Vox.
Who?
Benedict demanded. Tyson could barely contain himself.
It's frickin' Creed! He's here!
Part 2. The War for Cadia. Chapter 1. Casimirac, Cadia Secundus, Day 107 of the War for Cadia. On the scuffed blackboard of the ruined scholar, the lesson for the day was still drawn in chalk. Do not waste your tears. I was not born to watch the world grow dim. For the students of Scholar 5, Guildquarter, Casimirac, teaching had ended when the War for Cadia had begun, right there, in mid-sentence. But Minka knew the end of the quote. Every Cadian knew it. She'd spent hours as a child reciting her quote's imperium. She paused. Minka had been a student here just 4 years earlier. Her mind's eye looked back into her own past. The hall full of young cadets, girls with their hair cut military short, boys leaning by the locker doors, the tall, bearded scholar major standing with one arm braced against the wall, talking armoured tactics with a slight blonde cadet in ponytails. Minka allowed herself a second's indulgence. She smelled the carbolic soap on her freshly pressed clothes, the metallic scent of gun lubricant on her hands, the thrill of an hour about to be spent in the Imperial Chapel. But she could feel the impatience of her partner, Yegor, the last survivor of the 93rd Mordian Iron Guard. Medipacks, guns, ammo, battery packs, food. There had to be something here of use. Minka barely noticed the stink as she picked her way around the room, then into the officer's mess. Locker doors hung open, books and files and scraps of paper littered the floor. There was a bloodstain on the polished tiles, the puddle smeared where the body had been dragged away. Three bodies lay half buried under the fallen roof girders at the end of the corridor. They'd been there for weeks. The hollows of their eyes had filled with dust as snow filled a winter footprint. She checked the pockets of the dead men and got half a low stick and a hand-worn Aquila charm.
Anything? The Mordian asked.
Just this. She held out the Aquila. She wasn't an idiot. She kept the low stick for herself. Fighting broke out on Euphrates Street. There was a flash of a flare, the crump of a mortar, then the dull rattle bursts of a distant autocannon. Neither paused. You only heard the shells meant for someone else. Minka led them through the doorway into the enclosed square of the drill yard. The rock-reed slabs were marked with white lines. Someone had set up a water stand, but the metal drum was riddled with auto-rifle rounds, and the bottom was empty. Minka pointed.
Look!
Yegor couldn't see anything.
There, she said, and took his arm. A gun barrel. Can you see it?
Yegor squinted.
Cover me, he said.
Minka crouched in the corner of the yard, last carbine to her shoulder, as Yegor carefully picked his hand and footholds. He slipped back a little as he made his way to the broken window. The iron shutters hung by a single hinge. Yegor had to work his way round to the exposed side of the building. Minka caught his look and moved across the yard to cover him. A pair of corpses hung from the cast iron streetlights at the front of the school. The dead bodies revolved slowly on their axis. They had not been there yesterday. Minka slid her last carbine forward. She gave a low warning whistle, and Yegor paused and pointed.
Heretic, his signal said.
Minka nodded and put her carbine to her shoulder. It was time to kill. The captains of Battlefleet Cadia had kept their ships at the highest state of preparedness. They had battered the Black Fleet on its approach to the planet until the terrible understanding came to them that they had been trying to fend off only a single squadron of Abaddon's great armada. When the full strength of the despoiler had arrived at Cadia, it had smashed its way through the veteran defences, orbital and fleet-based, and it had turned the skies of Cadia black, blotting out the sun and stars. Landers, battleships, tankers and dropships had clustered over Cadia like flies on a corpse. Orbital bombardments had brought night as debris was thrown into the stratosphere. Then the first landings brought millions of cultists to the planet. Where they came from, or what these fanatics called themselves, Minka didn't know or care. The cultists were undisciplined, untrained, unable to hold their own against the elite Cadian troops. All they had was madness and ferocity. It was like fighting rabid dogs. In Kazimirak, the loyalists had dubbed them the Unnamed. Minka let the Unnamed come forward. He was gaunt, hive-world pale, his hands shaking. There was blood about his mouth. It didn't look like his. He had not seen her. Minka braced herself. The lasbolt hit him in the gut, and he went down like a wounded spider, bent double, legs and arms scrabbling wildly in the air. The second shot hit him high in the chest. This time his body fell back against the rockrete road slabs, and blood began to puddle about him. Magister House lay in Unnamed territory, 3 blocks south, between Euphrates Street and Statue Square. Rattling sniper Belag Grak lay on the 7th floor and waited. He had been behind enemy lines for 3 days now. The fighting had swilled around and through the building and passed on again, like a tornado or a tidal wave, and now he was among them. It was how he fought. A small, secretive shadow waiting for his moment to strike. A mortar team here, an officer there, just enough to keep the enemy disoriented and wary. 8 floors up with las batteries for 150 shots. 150 dead heretics. Belag crawled forward. An unnamed war party was making their way along Chapel Street, hunched like they were running into a storm. Belag picked out the leader. He wore a commissar's greatcoat and had a pair of heads hanging in his belt, a sword in his hand. The heads were fresh. One looked like demo expert Drawling, the other like his bombmaker, Eddard. Belag didn't waste time checking. He flipped the safety off, sucked in a few long breaths, and aimed. Nothing scared men more than a sniper shot, but the unnamed didn't even pause. They didn't duck. Even the man he had shot. The lasbold had hit him low in the back and his legs were gone, but he was pumped full of stims and he moved like a two-legged lizard, arms dragging him along the street, a smear of blood on the rockcrete behind him. Minka heard a shout. More unnamed were coming. She hissed up at Yegor to be quick, and he caught the end of a gun barrel and yanked. A stream of rockcrete dust slid down as he pulled himself higher. "It's jammed," he hissed back, and lifted an iron girder to yank the ammo feed free. The square metal box set off an avalanche of rubble and dust. It hit the ground with a full thud of stubber rounds. The Mordian put his shoulder under the girder. The shouts were coming closer. They must have seen the body. "Come on," Minka called. And Yegor put a hand under the girder and gave it a shove. The fizz of a fuse gave her a bare moment's warning. She caught Yegor's eye. It was clear he understood. The bomb went off. Captain Rath Sturm had seen everything the galaxy could throw at him, and he had the scars, metal skullplate, and augmetic eye to prove it. He'd earned his veteran stripes on Armageddon. A man who'd fought greenskins was hard to scare. He was the commander of the survivors within the city. He'd risen to that position not by rank or promotion, but because he looked after each and every one of his fighters as if they were his own flesh and blood. As the unnamed hunted for survivors of the explosion, he came at a run, vaulting a sandbagged doorway, heavy inward-curved brimlock cookery in one hand, bolt pistol in the other. The first 3 unnamed spun backwards as the mass reactive shells punched into them. The 4th was upon him before Rath could fire. Rath ducked an axe and cut upwards, slashing the heretic's throat out with his heavy cookery, shouldered the corpse out of the way, and drove forward. He took position in a doorway. "Find them!" Rath shouted to the men who followed in his wake. He did not look behind. He knew they would hear. He knew there were more and Naim to kill. He shot them as he charged down the street. Sergeant Tarvey found Yegor first. He was still breathing, but not for long. He moved on.
Here!
Guardsman Gunnell said. There was a boot sticking out from the rubble. Tarvey pulled at the blocks and threw them aside. If one was Yegor, the other had to be Minka.
Is she dead?
Gunnell said.
I don't know, Tarvey hissed, as he pulled the blocks of rockrete aside.
There was rockrete in her mouth and nose. Minka kicked against the rubble as the hands reached down to free her. They dragged her up. She spat the grit from her mouth, stood unsteadily on her feet, carbine still in hand, and blinked her vision clear. Someone was holding her face. It was Tarvey, his wide blue eyes staring at her. His mouth was moving. The explosion was still ringing in her ears. She read his lips.
Get back, he was shouting.
But she could not. Tarvey seemed to understand. He pointed. The blast had reshaped the rubble before her. It had reshaped Yegor, too. His arm ended in a torn and ragged mess of cloth and flapping flesh. His legs were wrong. His body was folded in two.
Get back, Tarvey shouted.
One of the heretics had an autogun with a round barrel. It flashed as it sprayed the wall above her head. Tarvey shoved her, but Minka would not leave.
Yegor!
She shouted, but it was too late for debate. She was thrown over her shoulder, her ribs bruising as whoever carried her jogged along, and found herself staring down at the ground, 8 feet below her. Chapter 2. Khazar Mairak. When the war for Cadia had broken out, the defence of Khazar Mairak lay in the hands of General Stahl, a typical high-ranking Cadian veteran of 150 years' service. Drawn from the aristocracy, he was well-liked and effective, and put the defences into good order. After the treachery at Tyrock Fields, Cadia was quickly swamped by traitor forces, and Khazar Mairak was surrounded by a warband of perhaps 10 million, who'd gathered like insects on the plains.
They were a rabble.
Their assaults had been haphazard and largely ineffective against the superior Cadian training and discipline, and their manner of war disgusted the defenders. It was heedless, disorganized, relied on bodies, not tactics, and at first, the hopes of the Cadians had been high. Khazar Mairak's turn had come on the 42nd day of the war for Cadia. After the void shields of their larger neighbour, Khazar Halik, had been overloaded, the vast fortress had been torn apart by a series of explosions that went from magazine to magazine. Finally, the atomic reactor went critical, and chunks of the city were thrown upwards by the force of the blast, leaving a crater a half a mile deep. A huge part of the siege army had been destroyed in the explosions, but the elite forces, iron warriors and disciplined bands of traitor guard, had already started moving out. It had taken 3 days for the siege armies of the heretics to surround Khazar Mairak. The Cadians had endured a relentless bombardment, partly from orbiting spaceships and partly from the vast armies on the plains. The shock troopers had retaliated with wall-mounted basilisk batteries and vast tower-mounted defence lasers. They had pummeled the forces of the heretics with great blue-white bolts of energy that stabbed out into the gloom. Each day, the unnamed attacked like rabid dogs, snarling and slathering, bounding on without fear or pain or order, deploying massed armoured and infantry assaults made up of untrained, inhuman scum. On the 4th day of the assault, spotters reported the first sight of ironclad space marines, towering over the heretic hordes. Just the rumour of iron warriors had brought a solemn air to the mess halls and guard chambers within the outer bastion walls. The iron warriors were here. Every guardsman knew that the fight for life had begun. Overnight, the heretic space marines raised great earthworks and began to push towards the outer walls, keeping up their momentum despite the approaching barrage. Tech priests detected the tremor of mole mines excavating ponderously towards them, while a storm of lance strikes rained down on the void shields, making the air fizz with ozone. For a week, the fighting was ferocious and bloody. During the day, flocks of arrow-shaped black bombers rained vast spiked frag charges and incendiary canisters down on the city streets. At night, the skies were barred with the beams of streaming searchlights and the red tracer fire of Hydra defense platforms. Each dawn brought the sight of the Iron Warriors' earthworks creeping gradually closer to the outer walls. Demolition squads rushed out of armored sally ports in up-armored chimeras, their multi-lasers spewing out searing bolts. The Cadians threw themselves at the Iron Warriors, but had to fight their way through cultist slaves who blunted their advance with melter bombs and demolition charges. Few Cadians returned from these missions, but each attack slowed the relentless assault for precious hours. On the fifth day, troops on the West Gate felt the tremor of mole mines approaching the walls, and teams of Cadian civilians dug countermines. The Cadians sent in demolition squads of their own, then flooded the Iron Warriors' tunnels with toxic slime and radioactive coolants. It was on the afternoon of the fifth day that the first Iron Warriors' mole mine exploded under the northeast bastion. The blast was immense. A whole section of wall lifted into the air, then crashed down in ruins. With a howl, tens of thousands of cultists charged. The number and fury of their charge rocked the defenders back and brought them right up to the cliffs of rubble. A few cultists started to clamber up the sacred walls of the Khazza before the blizzard of las and autocannon rounds cut them down in heaps. On the sixth day, two more mole mines exploded near the south gate, and there was ferocious fighting. This time, hand to hand, as the heretics crested the rubble walls and had to be driven back with flamer and bayonet. The battle went on into the night, with repeated assaults of demon tanks, heretics, and kill teams of Black Legion Adeptus Astartes that swooped in, bolt pistols barking with each shot, chainsaws spraying blood and gore across the walls. On the seventh day, whole sections of the outer walls were reduced to ash and rockrete rubble. Wrath's 94th Khazrakin had held the line that night, and the enemy's grand assault began after dawn. A frenzied, howling charge of mutants and heretics and those driven insane by the violence and the darkness. 10,000 unnamed made the first charge. They died to a man, cut down by scathing salvos of disciplined las rifle fire, withering support from the heavy bolter and autocannon squads, and precise shots from the surviving gun turrets and bastions. The heretics lay in heaps 10 deep when at last they fell back, mewling and howling curses at the defenders. That evening, a mole mine penetrated the magazine, deep in the bowels of the Rockreek Bastion. The armoured walls acted like a seal on the explosion, which vented out through the doors and loopholes before it tore the ancient Rockreek fortress apart. The void shields flickered and fell. Under a barrage of orbital bombardments and massed assaults, the walls had been attacked at all points at once, hemmed into the south banks of the Myrek River. On the morning of the eighth day, the warband of the Black Legion champion, Druxus Bale, battered the defenders with close-range Vindicator shells. Once the Cadians had been driven back, Druxus's warbands charged across the open ground in land raiders that mounted the rubble cliffs, shrugging off a blizzard of lasfire. Flamers gouted out under the smoke-filled sky. Assault ramps slammed down as bolters killed the last guardsmen. Then power armor-clad Black Legion warriors stormed out, the mass reactive shells of their bolters hitting the defenders with unerring aim, punching through the carapace and flak armor and exploding the Cadians from within. The sudden, precise and overwhelming assault swept the defenders away from the southern gates and down into the city. The hand-to-hand fighting was fierce and brutal, as tens of thousands of heretics swarmed up behind them and drove the Cadians back. General Stahl led the defence in person, a bodyguard of elite carapace-armoured Khazrakin about him. For a moment, they had thrown Druxus back, knocking Black Legion Terminators off the walls, but then the Chaos Warlord shoved his way to the fore. He was a giant warrior in Baroque warplate, bald head covered with obscene tattoos. In the hands of the Chaos Champion was crackling a sword of blue fire. He singled Stahl out.
"For Cadia!" the general shouted, and threw himself at the enemy.
He had fenced with the finest in the Cadian shock troop, and with an heirloom power sword and faith in the Emperor, he felt sure of victory. His first blow scored a deep groove in the Terminator's pauldron. The second drove through the layers of ablative armour, a fine blow that drove Druxus back for a moment. But Druxus was ancient long before Stahl was born, and it took more than a power sword to lay him low. He caught the blade in his open hand and broke it in half with a crackle of energy. Stahl refused to give way. He drew his hotshot las pistol and stood his ground.
In the name of the God Emperor of Mankind, he shouted as Druxus laughed.
The false emperor,
the Chaos Champion snarled as he tossed away the shards of the power sword. He caught Stahl by the chest and threw him to the ground. Stahl staggered back to his feet as his Khazrakin ran to his side. Druxus killed them all with a sweep of his axe that cut Stahl in half. With the breach in the wall and the death of the commander, Khazar Mairak had, as far as the forces of the Black Legion were concerned, fallen. Iron Warriors, Black Legion and elite mortal units moved on to the next siege and left Khazar Mairak to be plundered by the maddened hordes of heretics and cultists. Hopelessly outnumbered, the Cadians were driven back, block by block, exacting massive casualties on the enemy, but losses they could afford to take. Wrath was on the West Gate when the last assault began. His regiment, the 94th Brothers of Death, massed heavy bolters that cleared broad killzones above their bastion.
Never!
He shouted, shortly after the heretics' grand assault began. Their manner of war disgusted Wrath. It relied on insane, bestial ferocity. It lacked training and discipline. And worst of all, it was winning. The next assault came minutes later, with the same result. Wrath cursed and shouted as the enemy fired wildly, casually squandering supplies. The dead lay six deep before the eastern gate, where Wrath stood with his men, when news broke that the southern walls had been breached. Cadia was not a planet. It was a fortress built on a planetary scale. Its natural geography reshaped to allow defence and depth. Its cities, known as Khazar, were fortresses with resident garrisons of hundreds of thousands, designed not for the comfort of their inhabitants, but to be death zones to invaders. Marketplaces and street corners were set with bunkers and redoubts and emplacements. They were designed to be defended for months, or years if necessary. The long-dead architects of the Imperium had made no concessions for comfort or fashion. Any attack would be mired in tunnels, switchback roads, blockhouse ground floors, overhanging buildings with pillboxes and gun emplacements built into living rooms, public auditoriums and mess halls. There were ammo dumps deep in the bunkers of bakeries and hab blocks with reinforced buttresses and vision slits for windows. And there were bastions with landing pads on their roofs, and roofs so thick with reinforced rockcrete that they were practically invulnerable to anything except the heaviest bombardment.
Take to the city!
His commanding officer had shouted to Wrath.
Make them pay for every inch! Understand?
It was the last order Wrath had been given by a superior officer. He was his own master now. No one else knew how to drive him harder. Chapter 3. Statue Square. For the last 6 days, Wrath's company had made their base along the south side of Statue Square. The monumental buildings there offered good cover from air attacks, and they had a symbolic significance. The Cadians held on, despite all attacks. The field hospital filled the narrow gap between the museum and the veterans' hall. Morag Geron had to turn sideways to enter the gap. He set Minka down with a gentleness that belied his size. Before the war, all Minka had known about Ogryns was that they were giant abhumans whose strength made up for lack of intelligence. But Geron was anything but stupid. His wide mouth and blunt brown fangs did not work well on a human level. Speaking Gothic seemed like a great effort for him, as if he were translating everything he said from grunts to words. But his mismatched eyes, one brown, one blue, spoke louder than his voice. He kept saying her name.
Minka. Minka.
His brows knotted, and he stared down at her, full of compassion and worry.
I'm fine.
Minka pushed herself up gingerly. Her body hurt all over. Images came back to her. The explosion. The darkness. Yego crumpled in the dust.
Freck, she said. There was a stubber.
Geron looked almost bashful as he showed her the stubber with its ammo feed.
I got it,
he said. He pulled the bolt back. It pinged with a satisfying sound of a round being loaded into the firing chamber. He grinned, blunt brown teeth.
Works, he said.
Minka forced a smile. It seemed a poor trade.
I kill for Yegor,
Geren said. Good, she said. The 600 men and women of Wrath's company were all that was left of the 130,000 defenders of Kazimirak who had started the siege 108 days earlier. 600 fighting men, women and children at the last count, which was 2 days before. 2 days of constant retreat when they had fallen back to the southern side of Statue Square. They were shock troopers, mostly of the 94th, 45th, 772nd, and Kazimirak's own 87th. But there were others too. White Shields like Minka, civilians and survivors of other units who had come to fight on Cadia, regiments whose roll calls had once numbered in the thousands, but were now only a bare handful of names. On that morning, they held all the ruins between Statue Square and the river, where the tightly packed habs and warehouses and gantries lined the banks. They had about a month left of fighting before they were all wiped out. Less if the unnamed kept up this rate of attack. The unnamed had been attacking solidly for 15 days now, the waves of heretics rising and crashing and falling back like the waves of the sea. The tide was rising as Medicare Rhone cleared Minka, and she dusted herself down and picked her way to the barricades on the south side of the blockaded street. She looked out from the sandbag doorway as the unnamed came down the broad thoroughfare of Imperial Parade. Minka winced as she pulled her carbine to her shoulder, which hurt. 20, then 50, and suddenly there were hundreds of them, a wall of bodies with axes and clubs and serrated knives. She aimed and fired and winced and aimed again. All around her, Wrath's company took up their positions. They lay behind loopholes, knelt in sandbagged windows and doorways, perched in the ruins as the unnamed charged into the open. They howled as they charged, and were mown down by enfilading fire from heavy weapons teams hidden in the flanking buildings on Gold Street and Museum Street. Minute after minute, hour after hour, they kept coming, until Minka's shoulder was agony and her trigger finger ached, and she willed, prayed for this to be over.
Hold fire! Wrath shouted suddenly. Hold your fire!
Minka paused, and one by one the fighters about her lowered their rifles. But the unnamed were still falling, and Minka suddenly saw what Wrath had seen. Their enemies were falling to shots fired from behind.
Think our relief has come? Sergeant Tavi asked.
Wrath gave him a withering look.
There was no relief. The forces of chaos understand only force. What this means is that there's something bigger and tougher pushing the unnamed forward. We need to know who they are.
He gave Tavi a meaningful look. 5 minutes later, Sergeant Tavi was crouched in the sewer with 5 hand-picked men. He loosened his knife in its boot sheath and nodded to the rest of his makeshift squad. Theo, Malfred, Ullant, and Delland.
You should have kept your mouth shut, Delland said.
Should never have joined the guard, Tavi laughed.
He'd grown up in Kazimirak, and if he was going to die, it seemed fitting that he should be back here to do so. He knew the sewers well. It had been part of his cadet training, to know the city above and below ground, and before the war, Tavi had known a pretty young cadet who lived in one of these blocks. They'd hung around in the sewers together until he was shipped off-world. Aliona was her name. A smell came back to him, for a moment, despite the stink of smoke and ashes all about him. Tavi checked the grenade on his bandolier. He'd taken it from a fellow Cadian's corpse that morning, and he patted it for luck. Wrath's signal came. A simple tap-tap, tap-tap-tap of a finger on a vox bead. Tavi gave each of his squad a curt nod. His shotgun was loaded with all the shells he had left. He made a silent prayer to the Golden Throne and threw the wooden cover back. Being small had never been a problem for Belag Grak. No taller than a human child, the Rattling could clamber through holes that no man could ever get through. He pulled himself up, floor by floor, to a bedroom in what had been a well-appointed hab block on the southern side of Statue Square. The broad, pale wood floorboards were strewn with pages of books. There were clothes, grey with ash and dust, lying beside a split drawer. There was a hole in the wall where a missile had impacted, and a charred stink of explosives. He threw himself down on the floorboards by the window, crawled forward, breathing heavily, and pulled his long laz up beside him. Below him, the streets as far as Euphrates Street were filled with columns of heretic fighters. He used his scope to find a target. An enemy tank commander at the back of a column, standing in his turret, signalling to the driver behind him. Belag then pulled in three long, slow breaths to steady his aim. He lined up the man's head in the centre of the target. The distant torso bucked forward as the round hit him. The column slowed as the troop scanned for the sniper. Belag picked out a sergeant marching alongside the tanks, gesticulating wildly to his men. He fired again, a headshot that dropped the heretic in an instant. The column had stopped now, and he picked another and fired. Tarvi was up and out in a moment, crouching in the entrance hall of a hab block. There was a shape in the darkness where the doors used to be. He fired twice, heard a low grunt of pain, pulled the grenade free, kept moving. Shots rang out in the street outside. A shadow leaped at him. He was on the fallen man in a second, smashing the butt of his gun into the heretic's face, bones and teeth shattered under his blows. Tarvi ducked shots that hit the plaster above his head. Heretic voices were harsh and foreign. He threw himself against the hab wall and stole a glance through the empty window. Las rifle shots sprayed the wall outside. Wooden splints flew up as the frames smouldered. Tarvi felt the impacts through the wall at his back. He bit the pin and counted to five, tossing the grenade out into the street. "Crack!" he shouted, an instant before the explosive went off, filling the street with shrapnel. Tarvi leapt through the window and landed in the street. He fired one-handed, hitting a heretic full in the face. He ripped the autogun from the dying man's fingers. Tarvi was Acadian. He'd learned to strip a gun before he was tall enough to reach a door handle. Children on Cadia did it blindfolded. He knew what it was from the weight and the balance. Auto rifle, modified M40, Armageddon pattern, round magazine, 30 solid slugs, heavy hitter. Tarvi's finger was already on the trigger as he swung round. He fired short bursts, knocking three heretics back against the wall. A body shock took one out. A head shot slammed another sideways. Tarvi kept low, firing as bullets and las balls stitched the air about him. A red-uniformed fighter appeared round the corner and ran at Tarvi with an axe. Tarvi let the auto-rifle buck in his hands as the solid slugs slapped into the heretic's chest. The heretic danced like a puppet on its strings. It was a glorious moment of excess. The heretic fell dead a few feet away, black spiked helmet ringing out against the rockery floor. Tarvi crouched down and pulled the body over. The collar badge was stitched with two entwined letters. VC.
"Wrath," he hissed into the voxbead.
"Contact! Guess who's in town?"
"The sisters of our martyred lady," Wrath said.
"You wish. Volskani cataphracts." Wrath laughed humorlessly.
"Great. Now get back here."
Tarvi bundled his men into the sewer opening. Theo was last back in. Tarvi was about to follow when he felt vibrations through his boots. At the far end of Imperial Procession, the distinctive shape of a Lehman Russ appeared from a side street, exhaust puffing black promethium fumes. It turned for a moment on its tracks and faced the street. Then another tank appeared, and another, their banners of human skin flapping wetly as they accelerated towards him.
"They've got tanks," he voxed.
"How many?"
"Well, I saw six," Wrath cursed.
"This will be fun."
At the southeastern corner of Statue Square stood the ruins of a hab block. The rest of the row was made up of monumental edifices. The vast hulk of the Veterans Hall, and next to it, the Museum of Resistance, with the inbuilt chapel to St. Hallows. The buildings looked out onto the square, and up the triangular pediment of the museum, the white marble figures of Cadian soldiers marched in step. The vast buildings had given the Cadians a solid 150 yards of wall to defend, but it was different resisting tanks. The high ceilings and massive blocks would offer little defence against ordnance. One shot, and the weight of the walls would crash down. That did not hold them back. The defenders scrambled for position as the Volscani armoured columns came on. Minka ran up the broad steps of the Museum of Resistance. The inner hall of the museum was dark and empty, and scattered with paper, ration boxes and chips of stone. From each of the three doorways, galleries opened up ahead and to either side. The exhibits of tanks and equipment and medals had been locked away in the cellars or scavenged for the battle. All that remained were the empty pedestals, the uniformed mannequins now bundled up against the wall, and the battle-scarred banners of Kazimierz's home regiments. She could hear the shouts from the rear of the museum, where loopholes and windows gave fine fields of fire south towards the Volscani attack. She took the Castellan Hall, where two of Khan's squad were loading a missile launcher. The rest had taken up position at the barricaded windows, standing to fire, then ducking back again. Geron was at the far end of the hall, hunched over the heavy stubber, tongue between his teeth as he concentrated on loading a new ammo belt into it. "Need help?" Minka shouted, but the Ogryn growled as he finally got the fiddly shells to load. He held the stubber one-handed, hosed the street with rounds and grinned.
"You stand with me?"
Minka nodded. She took the opposite side of the window and risked a quick look. Volscani tanks were coming down the road in single file. At the head was a Chimera, its multi-laser turned 45 degrees to the left. Shots flared out in short bursts of red bolts. The tank commander was standing in the cupola. Minka fired three times. Her aim was out. She cursed and fired once more, but her charge was running out. "Freck!" she cursed. But as she fumbled for a new battery pack, a missile arced out from the museum windows and hit the Chimera on the nose. There was a blast of white smoke, and then a pause before the turret of the Chimera was ripped off with a roar of yellow flame. Minka slammed a new LAS battery into place as the burning Chimera was pushed aside and the distinctive shape of a demolisher-pattern Lehman Russ filled the street. The tank turned for a moment on its tracks, swiveling its fixed gun towards the back wall of the Museum of Resistance. Volscani's squad started to charge. Geron unloaded his Ripper again in a furious fusillade of lead. There was a ping as the magazine ran empty. Geron looked down confused, and then there was a low roar as the Lehman Russ fired. The shell hit the St. Josmain wing. Through the open galleries, Minka saw the shoulders of the building seem to shrug for a moment, before the whole facade collapsed into the street beside them. The smoking demolisher barrel swung towards where Minka stood as the Volscani started to scramble up into the museum. She had to grab Geron's arm with both hands. "Come on!" she shouted. "Quick!" Chapter 4. The Museum of Resistance. Belag knew he should be falling back, but the Volscani standard bearer was oblivious, and the oblivious made the most satisfying targets. He aimed and fired and paused to watch the round hit. The banner fell behind the ragged silhouette of the ruins. There was a girder walk between this building and the next. He put one arm out to balance as he crossed the brief patch of open sky, then fell back behind cover into the next building. He carried on, dropping down two more floors into a ruin across the road from Veterans Hall. He was walking quickly now, through a long hallway deep with papers, as a forest in autumn is with leaves. Below him, he could hear the roar and shouts of battle. It didn't concern him. A sniper was separate from all that. He killed from a distance. He was barely seen, and then he was moving once more. Belag suddenly felt he was being watched. He turned. Nothing but the long, empty hallway, open to the sky. There was a staircase that led down to the street level, but the Volscanians were making good progress, and he decided to take another high-beam walkway back into Hab Tyrog. That feeling again. He turned, quicker this time. Nothing. But Belag had instincts, and now his heart was beating. He wiped the sweat from his palms, crouched down and looked all about him. He started forward and ran straight into a giant boot in smooth blue-black plate. How anything this large and heavy had crept up on him, he could not guess, but he had seen enough of the Imperium of Man to know power armor when he saw it. He had witnessed the Adeptus Astartes once before, fighting on a world named Hargle Prime when he'd been lying in the upper branches of a coral tree as the sky filled with burning contrails. A drop pod had landed 50 feet to his right. It had smashed its way down through the stone branches of the forest and scored a long black line down the trunk of a coral tree. One door would not open, but the rest had slammed down, and 10 golden-armored space marines were out in a moment, splitting into 2 squads and killing. Belag had watched in awe. The Adeptus Astartes had shrugged off the impacts from axe or crude ballistic weaponry. He had almost cried watching the beauty of their warfare. Then one of the warriors had turned towards him and pinpointed his position. Bolter already raced a fire. Belag had gone stiff with terror, knowing that he would die. But the space marine had paused and nodded towards him as if to say, "You and I are on the same side, little warrior." That memory passed through Belag as he looked up at the vast shape before him, from greave to kneeplate, groin, piping, chest, and head. Images were carved there that were hard to see, but he saw the pale, wet skin slapped over one pauldron, and knew from the holes therein that this thing had once been human. When his gaze reached the warrior's face, Belag immediately wished that he had not looked. The Volscani cataphracts swarmed through the holes in the museum wall, clearing each hole with flamers and grenades before storming on to the next. Minka was with Khan's squad and Garen as they retreated back through the galleries towards the entrance hall. Garen used the stubber as a club, but he was bleeding from 12 wounds as he brought up the rear. The last Minka saw of him, he was standing in the ruin of a double doorway when suddenly the room was filled with long plumes of flaming promethium. The Volscani were only yards behind. A shot grazed her shoulder armor. She threw herself through a doorway. The dark shape of a Volscani trooper was silhouetted by the flames. Minka ducked and ran at him. Desperation drove her harder than she had ever thought she could fight. She rammed her bayonet into his chest. If he cried out, she did not hear it. A grenade skittered towards her. Con was shouting at her. She threw herself down on the ground as the explosion went off. The pain was sudden and hot and sharp. She put her hand up and saw her own blood. A low whoosh, and then a titanic explosion in the gallery she had just been standing in. There were flames and dust. Minka had no idea which way was forward or back. A figure came through the smoke. It was Wrath. He pulled her close and shouted in her ear, "Get back across the square!" Another shell impacted 30 yards to the right. She was down again, spitting dust from her mouth. Wrath dragged her back up. She hung in her oversized uniform as Wrath held her in one hand. He looked her in the eye to make sure that she understood. "Get back! Go!" he shouted, as another shell hit the museum walls. The space marine stared down at Belag. The giant wore a blunt blue helmet, with ornate brass fittings, wheezing pipes trailing off to either side, and flickers of light playing over the dark blue armor. Its eyes were red, the red of coals in a darkened room, intense with the heat of hatred and cruelty. Belag's hands began to shake. He dropped his long lass and desperately scrambled back. He knew that he was trapped. He had a better chance of survival throwing himself off the building than staying here with this monster. Bestial primary instinct told him that his impact would be swifter and easier death. The giant reached out towards him, but Belag was small. He twisted and turned away and flung himself from the building. He had a brief glimpse of Chapel Street rushing towards him. Parts of his life flashed through his mind as he fell. He regretted that he had not killed more heretics in his time. He regretted many things. But more than anything, Belag felt triumph that he had escaped death at the hands of this terrible monstrosity. From 8 stories high, impact with the ground should be brutal and instant. For a lowly member of the Astra Militarum, the prospect of a clean death was almost the best the warrior could hope for. That fact consoled Belag in the seconds as he fell. He was oblivious to the physics of the situation. He did not care that the density of a planet's atmosphere determined how fast you fell. Speed was determined by the mass of an object and its resistance to air. Heavier objects fell faster than lighter ones. All of this was of passing interest to the rattling. In moments, he would be dead. Speed was determined by the mass of an object and its resistance to air. It was a lesson that the Night Lord, Asab Krieg, had learned thousands of years in the past. He was waiting for the rattling at the bottom of the building, as a child would wait to catch a toy that was dropped from a high window. He caught him in one hand and held him up close to his face. Inside the helmet, the Night Lord's lipless mouth smiled.
"No," Asab Krieg said as the rattling screamed. "You're not dead."
There was a long, delicious pause as the Night Lord added,
"Yet."
Tavi drew in a deep breath as the Hablok wall exploded outwards into the street. The Volskani armor was smashing its way towards them from three directions at once. Through the cloud of dust and debris came the blunt, scratched and heavily armored front plates of a Lehman Russ demolisher, the turret traversing towards the bunker. His squad didn't have anything that could hurt this beast. Not unless...
"I've got it working,"
Guardsman Rawling hissed. He had a melter gun in his hand. It was one they'd found, but some heretic had done a freck job on it, with a riser ammo charge that was never going to fit. "Are you sure?" Rawling pulled a face.
"Sure,"
he said.
"I'm with you,"
Tavi said. From above, there came the patter of heavy bolter fire starting again. Short, precise salvos, conserving ammo. The demolisher's blunt snout appeared again. Rawlin threw himself down on the ground, aimed and fired. The air rippled as the supercharged beam raced out. Tavi felt the heat on his cheeks. It melted a small, neat hole in the armor plates, throwing molten slag into the cramped interior. The explosion blew the wall down on top of them. Something slabbed into Tavi's leg. It felt like he'd been hit by a sledgehammer. Thrawn! He tried to pull free. There were footsteps, struggling through the rubble. Volskani. Tavi scrabbled for his las rifle. Of all the ways to die, he thought, pinned to the ground. The hunter stood over him.
"Are you staying there?"